Probably can go directly to the last two slides, but then that will be. Jonathan will probably speak about it, and Christopher will probably speak on in the next two. There's really nothing. Sorry. Okay, so the only hope that I had was when Paul was giving this talk that after Paul does all the simulations, I'll go and say, well, he gets all these results from complex microphysics, and it's a much more simpler model, and I come up with very similar results. But then I think at the very end, Paul said, this is a very simple cluster model, so I can't say that as well. Okay, so I'll talk about ICM models and talk about SZ scaling relations and cosmological implications. I don't want to go through all of this. The main point is that if we have a wrong scaling relation and use it in cosmology, then you're going to infer wrong cosmology. That's the main point here. So incorrect scaling relations is incorrect cosmology. And it's still good to have a simple analytical model to get the scaling relations, because even if you have simple simulation models, it's not so easy to run many, many times simple simulation models. So if you want to use your models in Markov chains, then it's better if you have an antique model which does as good as a simulation model, or at least decently. So that's a motivation. Observation-wise, of course, we get scaling relations from X-rays, which has been here for the last two decades, maybe more than that. And it's becoming better in the sense, like, we have more precise data right now. I mean, the temperature data are quite good from XMM and Chandra. So we have temperature profiles, so we can sort of, up to a certain radii, we can sort of measure the mass. So you don't have to assume isothermality. And recently, of course, now we have SZ scaling relations. So a couple of years back, Benson et al. Had the first SZ scaling relation, and now there's Bonamente, which Paul already showed. So now we have SZ scaling relations, which we're going to use in all the SZ service that's going on, and will be here for the next decade, I guess. And the idea is to see whether we can have simple models that can reproduce these SZ scaling relations. Don't need to go through all these things. This is basically self-similarity, and which is very simple theory, but then in real life, of course, we don't get self-similarity. This is evident over here. So here are observations, all these data points over here. It's not very old, it's 2 years old, observations by Arnoff, Pratt, et al. And the solid line is basically, I think I could use this. The solid lines, these are observations at 2,500 over density, 1,500, this is extrapolation. The solid line is the best fit, and then it compared with some simulations by Evrard, the old simulations which were the non-radiative simulations, and then the radiative simulations. And of course, what's evident over here is what has been talked many times today, that the non-radiative simulations are far away, the radiative simulations do better. But even in the radiative simulations, you can see that at the low temperature, the low mass region, there is bias. And this thing becomes more and more when you go to, so of course, this over here, there's an extrapolation, but if you look over here and here, the differences are larger when you go to larger radius out. So simulations are farther away when you go to larger radius. So now, of course, there are better simulations, and Daisuke, Christoph, they will all talk about, and Paul, of course, have fantastic simulations, and where these things come down, but the question is whether it's still there yet. And then, of course, the next thing is whether we know the scatter. But in this talk, I'll not bother about the scatter, I'll just talk about the mean relation. So what is going on? And the simple answer is that, of course, we still lack our full understanding of the physics that goes in there, the gas physics. And many experts work on it, many talks today. There will be talks after my talk, so Christoph Daisuke will speak. And they will be keep working on this physics that will go into scaling relations and keep improving it. So I'm not going to focus on any of this microphysics. I'm going to do a much, much simpler job and sort of do something which is very phenomenological. So I'll see what we can get up constructing. Very, very simple model. And to see whether just taking clues from observations and imposing sort of what we already know from observations, can we go a little farther. So the bottom line is that what Paul said, if we let extra observations be sort of our benchmark, and so we normalize our things or whatever our models to extra observations, what do we, how do we aid AZ science? So can we get the AZ scaling relations? And then what's the implication for it? Okay. So here's a bit of motivation. So what I wanted to talk about before I heard Paul's talk was that most of the models that we have are sort of all bottom-up models. So we put in the physics, we build some model, and we predict the scaling relations and see whether it matches or not. And the problem is that most of the time it fails to produce scaling relations, at least at lower masses. And when you use such models as templates, then there can be tension. One of the tension is this excess CVI that CVI gets. And of course, for you think this is an excess, and you think it is I sigma I because you are using some models which actually does not match. But now after Paul's talk, I have to sort of cross this. There's no point talking about this. So ideally, what one should do is that one should basically go with observed scaling relations. Now, the problem is that, of course, we do not have all the observed scaling relations that we have. We don't have data at high redshifts. There is obviously no data at virial radius. We don't have data when you integrate up to virial radius, but this is what we need if you want to do a cluster count in cosmology. You want clusters identified with total flux, so basically you have to go to large radii. Till now, there are only two AZ observational scaling papers that I know of, and even AZ fluxes are measured, although AZ fluxes, I mean, doesn't fall off like X-ray fluxes up to larger radii. Even those are measured at smaller radii. So we need models which will agree with smaller radius and across a large mass range, and which can be sort of pushed to go to scaling radius at larger radii.
So why would you say we need to become total Y from Framen? I mean, you said we want the total SE flux at the virial radius.
I mean,
why is that?
I mean, most of these clusters in these surveys, not all of them will be, I mean, depends on what's the beam size and the cluster size are like. And you will probably want the total flux is more of a proxy for the mass than what simulations would say. So if you want a good proxy, you want to go to the size. That's where
You don't have to go to the zero radius to get a good proxy with mass.
I mean, then you have to extrapolate.
I mean, you don't want the central bit, but do you really need to go to the.
Well, in practice, no, but. We can have any scaling relation within any over density, and then we can extrapolate. But this extrapolation, again, would be your model-dependent extrapolation. So I mean, even over here, there is extrapolation. But then saying that in this extrapolation, at least in the region from where I'm extrapolating, I'm testing it, and then I'm extrapolating it. And this is easier if we normalize. I mean, even in this region where we know data is over there, if you normalize to X-ray, then it becomes easier to see the degrees. And so what we do is basically, instead of doing a bottom-up approach, we sort of have a top-down thing where we sort of normalize by hand, sort of force our scaling relations to agree with X-rays. And again, as I said, we need analytic ones, simple ones, because we want to run Markov chains. Okay, so we have to start with the simple model. So our dark matter halo, which Paul started, which is in which the gas falls in, it's an NFW profile. And what we need is to sort of in this model, decide on what is the size, what's the size of this halo, because we want the gas to go up to the halo size. And we have to then go to the definition of the halo, which is, as you know, defined by a constant over density. Choice of over density is depends on who or what you're doing to do with it. X observations typically go to higher over density, so smaller radii. Simulations to go up to real radii. And then, of course, this is analytical real radius. And if you have an NFW profile, one can convert between one over density, one mass of the halo to another mass of the halo. Now, clusters typically do not have a well-defined boundary. So to do this model, one has to decide on a boundary for the cluster. And this, I think, is a good boundary, which is 2 to 3 times the real radius, which is sort of the short radius. So we can sort of think of the gas and the dark matter to be, I mean, the cluster to be sort of within this 2 to 3 real radius. The important thing is the halo concentration, which turns out to be very important in all these models. And this is a function of cluster mass and redshift. And for our model, we sort of use this from a recent paper by Kammerford and Natarajan. It's a huge compilation of concentration from X-rays, from lensing, from strong lensing, from weak lensing. So this is sort of the latest CM relation that we use. Okay. Now the baryonic matter, of course, once in the dark matter halos, the gas falls in. Even now, a lot of these observational papers work with beta model, where this is the beta model. This is how the gas is described in the beta model. The problem is that if you assume isothermality and calculate the total mass, which is mainly done in most of the observational papers, then the beta model total mass is an underestimate. And so there is a mass bias. So of course, you cannot do a beta model. Improvements, of course, are like McKinnon and Suto did a non-isothermal analytical solving for gases. And then Aikido and Euros had this universal model. And then there's Ball and Ostreicher. They also had this, so-called simple model of cluster, which I don't find very simple. Anyway. So this is important because I'm going to compare a little bit of what we get from this Komatsu and Sajak model, which is very popular and widely used. Now, this is where the observations come in. So what we do is that we sort of assume, or we sort of impose, that whatever clusters we have are normalized to X-ray temperature observations. So there are two types of clusters, sort of divided into two groups, the cool cores and the non-cool core clusters. Observations sort of show that cool cores have a dip. And over here, the cool core basically means approximately, for example, Sanderson et al. Find that this is the kind of temperature profile at the core. And that core is defined as 0.1 of R500. And outside the cool core, we take the temperature profile to be polytropic. Whereas for the non-cool core clusters, the polytropic profile goes all the way inward. It's more or less flat below there. So our final temperature profiles, when you do this and solve and come to later how we do it, basically matches very well with what we see in observations. So observations, when I say observations the last 2 years. Now to get the gas density profile, to do that, we have to solve this dynamical equation. So this part is the thermal part. And over here is the dispersion part, and then there is this anisotropic pressure. We put this equal to 0. This is not a large contributor to it. Now, for example, again, to go to Komatsu Sajak model, over there they only look at the thermal part of it. So they don't really bother with this part. But this is also important because, I mean, as you can see, as we'll show in this next couple of slides, when you put in this dispersion pressure, it does modify your scaling relations as well, whatever follows from the scaling relations. Over here, X is R by R code. Now, if we have neglected this thing, again, we would have biased our mass estimates, just like a beta model would have biased our mass estimates. And this bias is, again, almost as bad as the beta model bias. And depends on where you are, how far we go out the cluster rate. Okay. So now we have to have a model to how to put in, incorporate this this extra component. Now, we are not doing simulation, so there is no easy way to put in this part. So this is where, apart from Excel observations, we're going to take help from what we get in simulations. So what we do is that we do not sort of put any direct inputs of non-thermal pressure support from any simulations. What we do is that, so different simulations give, in absolute terms, give different amount of non-thermal component. But if you compare simulations with different simulations, the relative non-thermal pressure to thermal pressure, that trend is more robust in some sense. So basically take that trend. So whatever with the simulations, if you look at the misestimation of mass when we don't take the non-thermal part and basically make use of that misestimation to get this thing. So over here, for example, if we have got the mass from getting this whole thing, which would be the true mass, and if you have got the mass only for getting this, this will be a different mass. So if you take the ratio of the mass that we get from having only this and the true mass, that sort of gives a handle on the response speed. So for example, if you look at simulations, that would say that at virial radius, there is 20% misestimation of mass. So we basically mainly look at simulations by Razier et al. And Christoph, and they come up with different models, because this is a variable, how much non-thermal pressure is there. Come up with different model of this non-thermal dispersion pressure. And so these are like total pressure by the thermal pressure. As you can see, at virial radii, there is almost 40%, 50% non-thermal pressure. So this is important if you want to look at M200 relations. And the corresponding mass estimation, as you can see, at real radii is like 20% to 25%. That's the mass misestimation. So at zero, you almost basically get no misestimation, but over here, we are sort of misestimating masses by 25%. And because we go to twice our virial almost, so we have to, it's around this. So the typical thing to understand is that for this AZ scaling relations, which is at R2500, which is around here, there is not much of a difference. But if you want to go to R200, then there's a lot of difference. If you don't take this non-thermal part into account, then you're going to make mistakes. On the other hand, because the total mass of the gas is conserved, as will come later, this two are connected. I mean, it's not that you only, if you don't take into account this pressure, you're going to make mistakes over here. You're going to make mistakes over here also, because it's basically one connected thing in this dynamic equation. No, this okay. So these are analytic models, but the trend is from simulations. Yeah. So simulations, for example, if you take the Razier simulation, it will say that at our virial, it's around misestimation of mass is around 25%. So which is what Christoph would also say. If you go beyond our virial, it's like 30%. So yeah. No, this is not cosmic rays.
Yes.
Cosmic rays, what Christoph will say, doesn't make much of a difference. And so this is your compatible. Basically, you can build your non-thermal to thermal pressure profile by knowing this kind of mass estimate. So you can, from simulations, you can get what is the misestimation of mass at, say, 0.1 R real, 0.3 R real, 1 R real, 2 R real. And then you have a very smooth non-thermal to thermal pressure, which will give you this thing.
So you're assuming universality of this? The PNT over PT?
I am assuming that the over different simulations, the ratio is more or less constant. Although each simulation has different numbers. And I looked at a few simulations, and the ratio is not that.
So why wouldn't it be universal?
Why would it be?
Why?
It's mainly.
It's a question of exactly how sigma r is defined. So the thing is, it's got a sort of larger scale motions as well as any sort of short distance turbulence. The simulations don't actually do such a great job from the short distance actual turbulent cascade. So
isn't this mainly infall?
It better not be.
Well, I don't know if you look at
because it's a relative thing relative to the bulk. Right. I mean, there is a mean bulk flow which is occurring within the cluster. And then there are these dispersions relative to that are giving pressure. I mean, there's a dynamically active situation that may be occurring or may not be occurring, depending upon the degree to which the cluster is settled down into an equilibrium in the other regions. I mean, there is a term, but it's not described by these ones, right? You know, there's a true kinetic piece, which is not described by a turbulent pressure, obviously. And that, I think, is also varies from cluster to cluster.
Ah, so you mean universal in the sense of cluster to cluster?
Yeah.
I mean more in the sense of,
yeah, so,
I was thinking more like for different
Well, he's assuming a basically a universality in something that will have a lot of cluster to cluster fluctuations,
okay,
which of course will feed into any ascent.
That's true.
Yeah.
So.
Except that this recent paper by Lau et al., they also find results which are very similar to this. Which
find that we actually calculate them in gas equations, sort of similar to how you define sigma. Measure that, I mean, basically in the way that you actually quoted it, I think it's contributed up to about 10% at R500, increases toward the outskirts of galaxy clusters. So those are, there are motions of gas that can potentially provide some pressure support.
But that 10% is for relaxed clusters.
It depends on the dynamical state of clusters. If you define relaxed, unrelaxed cluster, unrelaxed clusters, whatever the way that's defined, that tends to show higher levels of dynamical activities and motions.
So in this whole of this talk, as I said, there's no scatter. This is all over. But I mean, even with this thing, the numbers are very close. So
similar,
yeah. Okay. The other thing I wanted to show is that, okay, one thing I want to point out over here is I will come to this model 4 and model 3. These are different models that I looked about, and these models are basically very arbitrary models in a sense because the mass estimation goes from 40% to 30%, so you can basically look at different models, which is just smooth models, almost zero over here, but slightly different at arterial. Depends on what simulations you look at. So this is where R2500 is, which is where Bonamente et al. Look at the scaling relations. And they do a beta model thing. This will come later, so I'm just showing it over here. And as you can see, if you do a beta model, as I said before, you have a misestimation of mass. So it's like 20% misestimation of mass. Whereas if you look at, if you want to look at the real relations, or if you want to look at is it power spectrum, then you are looking at contribution from the whole of this cluster. So you want to look at regions over here, which is at arterial. And over here, if you don't take into account your this extra, only if you take into account only thermal component, then this is the kind of misestimation of mass, which is again 20 to 30%. And these are from Razi et al. Simulations, and this is the kind of mass misestimation that we have, which sort of mimics Razi et al. So now the next thing is that, as I said, first we have to take into account that the temperature profiles were from X-rays. The next we do by hand is that we force the temperature normalization from X-ray observations. And for that we take this San et al. Observation, which is probably the latest and the maximum range in mass. So it has Wicklund observation as a subset of the whole thing. And as you can see, if you look at the Wicklund 06 mean, this is in this is purple line. This is just an extension, of course. The Wicklund 06 clusters are over here only. The San et al. Clusters go all the way over here, go into groups. As you can see, if you look at the same mass, you see that there are more temperature at lower masses. And this will be important when you go to. Next slide. So, and the other thing to notice is that, of course, this is not self-similar. So self-similar slope would be something like this. Now, this region is where a lot of clusters, I mean, a lot of objects are there which contribute to SZ CLs. So this will become important in the coming slides. Okay. So this is how the temperature is normalized. This is fixed to X-ray normalization. So in the gas dynamical equation, you also have to normalize the density. And again, to do that, we assume something very simple. So what we assume is that even whatever be the temperature, how the gas is distributed, whether it's pushed due to heating or cooling or whatever, when you go to very large radii, arterial or more than arterial, the integrated gas mass, that fraction assumes universality. So at least arterial or more than that. And this region, we have something of the order of unity over here. So depending on how much stars you think, you can have 0.9, 0.95, and then this universal fraction. This is how we normalize your density profile. And then you come up with sort of a few models to just to see how things change if you train models. These are different by where the gas density or how the gas density is normalized. So it can be universal at R real, it can be a little less than universal at R real. It can be universal at 2R to 100, which is more like the shock radius. And then you can have different thermal to non-thermal component for each of these cases. And of course, you can have only thermal pressure. So you can look at these different components. Okay. Now, the thing to notice is that the temperature influences the density through this dynamical equation. But once we have normalized the mass, the density influences the calculation of this average temperature, with which we have to normalize the X-ray observations. So this has to be done iteratively. You normalize your density, you calculate your temperature, normalize the temperature, then again calculate the density, and you go on a loop until you sort of reach a consistent solution. Once you do that, you come up with temperature and density profiles. And these are very simple temperature and density profiles. This is polytropic on the outskirts. And so if it's a non-cool-cool cluster, then the temperature goes all the way up. It just increases over here, slightly flattens out. If it's a cool-cool cluster, it's R to the power 0.4 kind of decrease that you see in the X-ray observations. And again, in the density for the cool-cool clusters, you have this bump over here. And all this four is basically high redshift, low redshift, 10 to the 15, and 10 to the 14 clusters, so just four cases. However, if you look at the pressure is much more forgiving, so there's not much difference between cool-cool and non-cool-cool clusters because it's supporting the same dark matter potential, which is what you also found that you wanted to see. Okay. So let's recap what we did. We made our entire modeling based on this fact that the recent high resolution X-ray observations for temperature gives you the temperature profile and the temperature normalization. The universality of the baryon fraction at largest radii. And the third thing was the most easy thing, the non-thermal component from simulations. So these are the three things that go into it. So this is as simple as this. So with this, now we construct the SZ properties of clusters. So we construct the SZ scaling relation. So all the scaling relations are given in terms of log y is a plus v log x, where y is SZ flux. X is gas mass, total mass, or temperature, because this is what Bonamente et al. Does. And compare with the observations. Then we go on to construct the SZM200 scaling relation. And so this scaling relation now can be used to calculate DNDZ for any of these cluster surveys. And we also do the SZ power spectrum and compare with the CBI observation. So Christoph will be talking more about this. Jonathan will be speaking more about this. So I'll just show one slide for this. These are the two things which was not shown in Paul. So as I said, there's not much to see. OK, so first let's compare the SZ flux to M gas. Okay. So this is Bonamente data, and this is the best fit Bonamente relation. This M gas over here, SZ flux, what they do is that they do a beta profile fitting to the data. So their model, their M gas, their SZ, these are all beta model fits to their data. So this is the best fit SZ flux. And I don't know whether you can see over here. They're basically dashed dot and dashed data points, which is low redshift and high redshift. But anyway, this is the whole data goes from redshift of 0 to redshift of 0.9. That's their redshift range in SZ data. And they have two regions, which is like low redshift, which is redshift of 0.0 to 0.3, and then 0.3 to 0.9. Now, if I try to do our model, which is extra normalized, then this is what we get. The four different models, all of them are, and as you can see, I mean, if you just compare with the best fit, of course, you can see that there's a little difference, but this does sort of go through all the data points. And I will show the chi-squared later, so how well this simple extra normalized model fares.
The mass temperature relation also, I think a little bit of this beta model fitting also changes this. So now the other thing I wanted to show is what I was talking to during lunch is that so a lot of this SZ work is done with Icaro's model, which is again not a
X-ray normalized model predicts some X-ray mass temperature relation, and it doesn't really agree with the mass temperature relation at lower masses. So you would think that if those models, you construct your cluster based on those quasi subject model, where does that fit over here? And this is what it is. So this is, again, you take your quasi subject model, do a beta model fit to your M quasi subject Y and M relation, and you get it like this. No, you have to look at, you cannot both of these are derived quantities. Both of these are derived quantities. So in one sense, you can think of that if this is more of a proxy for mass, then you are getting less gas over here. So with the composite subject model is that it has lower temperature at lower masses. I mean, so because it's lower temperature, the gas mass sort of, so it has to have the same, if it has to support the same amount of dark matter, then it has to have more N number of electrons to support. And if you do the chi-squares over here, this is, I mean, this is a kind of best fit Bonamente et al. Chi-square that they have. This is not a reduced chi-square because the error bars are very large. And this is a kind of chi-square that there's different models you have. I mean, thermal model, of course, does much better. So you need a non-thermal, you need this dispersion pressure. Over here, the second chi-squares are what would happen if we only took the low redshift 0.0 to 0.3 values. And unfortunately, in this M-gas Y case, the case model is not doing very well. KS model is just what KS does, and it's universal, and so you just take the NFW if you have M total and then everything goes. So there's no, so it will have its own entry relation. And then it will have some pressure density profile, then you can fit a beta model to the density SZ profile. And so you basically fit a beta, these beta model profiles come from fitting to the X-ray. So the way Bonamente gets the beta for beta model is they fit it to the X-ray to get the beta. And then that beta is used to calculate your SZ. So again, in the commercial cell, you have to know the X-ray profile and then fit your beta to that. So you have to do it consistently the way these people are doing.
So far ahead of his time that the parameters have changed a lot and concentration mass relations have changed. So
okay.
Has it been updated to accommodate some of the
the concentration mass relation has not been updated because that so this is the model which gives you the template that goes in if you look at the Lambda website, then it has a template. So this is the model which will give that as a template. With which you are doing your systems. So the concentration mass relation is obviously different, so that will change things. Cosmology is, over here the cosmology is the same, because you cannot change it. Okay. So this was three plots I showed, the best fit, then our model, then processor. Then I got lazy, so in the next M total I will show two plots. This is the best fit in our model over here. Again, this is the best fit, and this is how the model is. Now, one thing you have to understand is that one of the reasons that there is a change in slope is because of the beta fitting that I'm doing. So if you think that the beta model, if you didn't do a beta fit, if you just had your M total versus Y D, where this M total was not a beta fit M total, you would have a thing which would be like this, very similar to the slope and like over here. And then you could have said, well, there's a 20% offset. And then sort of lower all your M total by 20%, then you'd have sort of fallen on top of this. But if you do a proper beta fit, then there is a change in slope. But over here, this is what the KS model will be doing. So this is not that bad. And this is how you compare your
Bonamente with our models. And so, okay, the first chi-score is for the entire data, which is all the clusters from 0 to 0.9. And the second one is clusters which are local in some sense, 0 to 0.3. And if you look at the local data, the fit is, or the model agrees with the data or the best fit to the local clusters better than if you take the entire range. Although the Bonamente does comment that their best fit with the error bars for the lower redshift sample and the upper redshift sample, they do not differ because they are very closely separated. But I mean, over here, as you can see, if you take the entire range, maybe there is some kind of illusion, some kind of bias in observation for high redshift or in the model. So for the lower redshift range, it does much better.
So is that a single model?
It's a single data model. They excise 100 kilopas. So all these things are done exactly the way Bonamente has done their thing. So they excise 100 kiloparsec from their clusters at the center, irrespective of the cluster. So you have to do that. Then the temperatures for there, this, I'll come to it in the next slide. So the temperature that they measure when they do their mass flux temperature, the temperature is within some radii that way. So you have to basically match exactly the way you have to do this. If you don't do that, then your relation will shift.
You had a very different behavior for the y.
Yes.
But if you thought it's the
y. Yeah, it's not that bad. Yeah, it's not that bad. I think it has to do with the gas and the temperature being on two sides of this behavior. We'll come to the. It's in some sense it compensates. In one, the in-gas sort of is on the top. The temperature is on this side. It sort of compensates because in the M tot it sort of has the m-gas times the temperature. If you look at the beta model M tot, the beta model, if you get the M tot from the beta model, it has any times so beta times the temperature, right? So it sort of compensates. One it's up, one is down, and in some sense the M tot is not compensated. And then I got even lazier, so over here I plotted all the three in the same plot. Okay, so this line data is, I think, is very bad over here. I don't know whether you can see the data. Jonathan, can you switch it? So anyway, this is this is the data, and this line over here, this purple line. This is the best fit from Bonamente. And this line is, again, what the model would give. And this is what KS would do. So as you can see over there, the M gas was over here, the M tot was. These are different, some of our models, model 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever, this line. And this line, this one, high over here and low over here. This is the best fit of Bonamente. And then this is the case model. Okay, so this is, and then again over here, as you can see, and the chi-squares are pretty close, and this is quite bad. Same over here. So it's depending on what you look at, whether it's M gas or M total or temperature, it's not always true that model one is best. Sometimes model one is best, sometimes model three is best, but it depends on one of the two models. It's fluctuates. And as I said, this difference in the different models is basically how you normalize the total gas mass. So whether it's universal at R virial or whether it's universal at twice R200, so how do you do? Okay, so that's about SZ scaling relations and what we'd get if you had a simple analytic model and normalized it to X-ray and predicted your SZ. And it does agree quite well. Of course, next is a scatter, but over here it does agree quite well. So the first thing one can do is, of course, after you get this SZ scaling relation, one can go and look at SZ power spectrum. And this is from IQO's paper. Basically, CLs are very strongly dependent on sigma 8. So if you measure the CL, you can constrain sigma 8. And this is what people have been doing. And I'm not going to talk anything about this because Jonathan will speak about latest results. This is from this new paper. The thing is that when you do it, and if you use one of the templates, so if you use iCurl's template or if you use SPH simulations as a cluster template and try to get your sigma A, this is what you get. So the old paper by Dick got something like 1. And now you have something like 0.922 best fit sigma if you use IQS template and 0.98 if you use SPH simulations. And if you have to compare it with WMAP 5, which is 0.817 plus minus 0.03. Okay. So how does they compare? Over here, I've just plotted one of our models. This is the SPH is at the cluster. And this is IQS, the processor jack. And this is for the new model. So if you look at the different models, it will have a spread over here. So this is, it will spread somewhere around here. All the models will be over here. All the models will be more than this, but it can be less than this, and it's likely more than this. Okay. And one thing, as you can see, is that there is more power. So at this region, it's more or less the same. In fact, IQLO has a little more power because if you look at the empty relations over there, empty relations, the best fit empty relations are the temperature of the high mass cluster slightly less if you normalize compared to IQLOs. But over here, the temperatures are much more for the low masses. And so you have much more power over here. So much more flux per cluster in some sense.
Because when you show the flux total mass relationship, the Shearer's model was higher everywhere. The C flux
was always higher for a given total mass.
That's 2,500.
That's right.
And remember the total gas mass. So he's
no, the total mass, not total gas mass.
No, the total gas mass is also conserved.
Yeah, but do you agree that you don't change the mass function for the total mass? Because
mass function is the same.
That's right.
Yeah, that only depends on
so the mass function is the same, but at least within R 2500 you're increasing the flux for all the clusters.
Not necessarily.
Well, I mean that's
I mean what is happening is that because it's being it's because for so okay, for slow mass clusters, for example. It's contributing more in this SZ power spectrum because low mass clusters have higher temperatures. Also, the form factor is changing because if you have higher temperatures, the gas is being pushed out. So
yeah.
it's more pushed to the outer. However, within this 2R variable, which are defined as the total cluster, the assumption is that it reaches universality. So the gas is there. I mean, it's just pushed out from the core region.
Yeah.
So it doesn't. So one assumption is it does not escape the cluster beyond the shock radii. It's sort of.
But you would think actually that higher L's are more sensitive to smaller radii.
Higher L's more sensitive to the smaller masses.
Smaller masses. Well. Okay.
So before you go, so in this plot, so the units here are
modified.
Is this
spread?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
For
so that's micro case where what frequency?
Zero.
Either 0 or 30, but the factor is 0.
Okay, but it's rarely changed.
Yeah. So and this is for yeah, close to enough. So you need to go increase the sigma to go over here.
So is that main difference between do you have a sense of what redshift that difference is coming from? So between KS and your model, was that?
A lot of the difference is coming from not very high redshift, but beyond redshift of 0.5.
Okay. And it's from things, because in that previous plot, in the YM total relation,
yeah.
It's almost the same YM total in the range that contributes to the FD power spectrum.
It's very difficult to look at it this way. One has to go from R500 to R200 and see how it, because after all the density is profiles are different for this thing, so this is different, and then again one has to do a beta fit to it because you want to compare with the
Okay, so the plots that you're showing, so the Y versus M, is it, that was at zero range?
No, no.
That was our 2500. Yeah. That's where most of the signal is coming for the power spectrum.
No.
No. It's almost at B. It's almost the better radius. If you don't basically see trope, and that's a better radius, it's pointing off as roughly is R33.5, so it means it's sort of conversions. Just in order of radius. That's where most of the signal comes from.
Wait, what's Bowling's R?
See, pressure profile, the density plot is roughly R3.3, and then it's temperature dependence and also sort of inverse variable behavior.
As we have discussed, that's not a very rapid convergence at all. It makes things sensitive to the other cutoff in terms of the overall P bar V, also known as capital Y. So there is a sensitivity. Have you used exactly the same as in the KS law for where you actually integrate up to?
Yeah, both are the same.
And what was the justification for that number? I think your justification was that there was a little bit of interaction with the simulations of the day.
If you go back to the one of my plots. Not this one, sorry. You
I
had a study of the sensitivity of this curve to outer radius.
Yes.
And once we read three times the radius, the calculation have converged. Very little difference by going farther. So we thought that would be the nice conversion point. So the calculation has converged.
So three.
Once we go to three times our radius.
And so what did you choose?
Three times our radius.
And well, you chose two.
But these are all 2 points.
So wait a second, which definition of V are you using?
So this, all the plots are consistent between Ks except that the model is different. Your model is normalized by omega density to, so density of baryon gas to density of dark matter at radial radius. That's how it's normalized. Omega is normalized to being the total integrated gas mass at all models for different normalization. That's different. Another difference is the CM relation, which is yours and all about. The third difference is, important difference is the mass temperature normalization. Where in your case, the mass temperature comes naturally from your assumption. So that's the three differences. Otherwise, it's all the going up to twice R200. That's how the cluster is defined. So that's why I started, what is the cluster boundary like? That one is inside. So shock radius is approximately 2 to 3 RV also. Okay, so this is what it is, and then Jonathan will show tomorrow. So if you try to analyze your CBI data with these three models, then this two was already there, so this one, as I said, was 0.922, and the other one was 0.988. So now we have a third model now. And this is what you get, 0.85. So this is the three. So now your one of these two are stuff in the setting of each other. And the only thing that I've done is basically a simple model, three assumptions that it agrees with X-ray observations of mass temperature relation. It reaches universal baryon fraction at really large radii. And the most iffy assumption is this non-thermal to thermal pressure. In fact, if you lower down the non-thermal component, you increase your thermal component, you will get actually more power. So in that sense, it's a little bit of one can go down also if you lower down your non-thermal power. So the other thing which is important is this SZ flux in 200 relations. I don't want to go through it. But now we have SZ flux M200 relations which are normalized to observed SZ flux M2500 relation, which is what we have right now. So it's not like taking your X-ray M2 relation and just multiplying X-ray M2 relation and getting your SZ relation. And one can use this to do your DNDZ. And this is important because ultimately if you want to do a constant cosmology to whatever percentage you want to, you better worry about 10% changes in number of clusters. This is what you get. Okay. So in summary, the thing I want to say is that this is a top-down model, not a bottom-up. Getting confused with my own terminology.
where we have normalized to this observed extreme mass temperature relation. And the pressure profiles have been used to construct this as a cluster templates. And this shows that if you compare our results with the best fit Bonaventure results of YT, YM gas, YM total, there was also gas fraction I didn't show. So gas fraction also agrees pretty well. I mean, gas fraction actually, if you look at the X-ray, Bonaventure and the models, they all, there's a big scatter in the gas fraction, but it does agree. And they're in quite good agreement. And I think it has two important implications. First one, which is, I don't know, people can debate, is that I would say that this way you can say that we are sort of looking at the same family of clusters in SZ and X-ray. So you take your X-ray clusters and you construct your model normalized to X-ray clusters and you get your integrated SZ properties and you basically have a observed integrated SZ properties. So it's like if you can believe your X-ray and you can interpolate into SZ. So it's like looking at the same family of clusters. And we should be more confident about predicting your YM200 scaling relations because this will be used for all the cluster surveys or YM200 or whatever large radii. And when you use this SZ templates to calculate the SZ power spectrum, there is increased power, and this gives a best fit sigma of 0.85, which is close to within one sigma error of the WMAP sigma. And so I think having simple models and normalizing to X-ray data has some advantages. So it does give good scaling relations and improved or better sigma height, compatible sigma height with WMAP 5. I'll stop it. Thanks.
So, what's beta of X? I mean, I know what it is, but tell me what your beta, your anisotropy
is. No, anisotropy is zero.
You've dropped it.
Yeah.
So that obviously is a non-trivial thing to have dropped because we expect that, in fact, it's actually not. It's going to get a little more radial in the outer region, and that's actually got an impact. So, the real problem with trying to deal with these models is that you have that unknown factor, and the only way you can really get it is by simulation.
Yeah. So one of the motivation of course, is an easy way out because I dropped it, was to look at this Razia et al. Simulation, which where they really look at these different terms and calculate what is that paper actually basically about mass models of clusters. They look at different terms and calculate how much changes in mass counts or what's the difference between different components. And this anisotropy term was not making that much of a difference. It was making less than 10% difference in total misestimation of mass.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of the structural impact.
Yeah. So if it does a 10% difference and most of it is coming from the really large radii, it's like an additional non-thermal part, which is not going to change whatever non-thermal part I already have. It's not going to change that. And I have a range of non-thermal things, so from non-thermal component, which will give you a 30% change in mass to a 15% change in mass. So again, there was one plot which looked at different non-thermal to thermal pressure, which would give you different misestimation of mass as a function of radius. And you have a range of models, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you took two extreme models over there, and that gives you two extreme CLs. So it could probably fall within that range.
Just to get an impression, the implication of the non-thermal pressure support on the final sigma 8, did you run a model without a non-thermal pressure support?
Yes.
And how much did it buy sigma 8 prime? Oh, sorry, it buys is low actually, right? I mean,
No. Basically, you have much more gas. You have much more gas. Temperature is high, the gas is also high.
But how much was the effect?
Not that much. I mean, sigma 8, okay, I don't know in terms of sigma 8 because going, but I can tell you in terms of the power spectrum. So I think it's 70 to 87, so 15, 20 Kelvin more, microkelvin square more. So this was like 75, something like that, 73, 75, and that was like 87. So this is the difference.
Okay, well,
One last question so we can.
What's the implication of this for the SCA data then if you used your template by measuring and seeing it at like 0.75 or are they farther away from WMAP than CBI?
No, sorry, I didn't get you.
If you used SCA, SCA data in your template, then what's the implication for their mean
measure? No, so how does the SCA data compare with the parameter at all? I mean, is it?
What if you do the same analysis to do for CBI yeah. with SCA?
That was joint.
That was, yeah.
It had CBI, SCA.
Yeah, quality. Everything was there. Yeah. Only BIMA was not there.
So generally, if you take CBI and fit just to CBI and SCA relation, you go through about one sigma above SCA.
And that's also true as well.
Yeah, but it's not that much.
So how do
you take,
when you do this joint fit, when you do non-Gatsby and the SCA?
So I'm actually doing non-Gatsby now. So the yeah, they're an even better agreement once you say there's my Gaussian energy.
Sure. But I guess it's not essential for these small fields.
Yeah, but I just, you know, got it from Shiva not that long ago. And I have
other things. All right, let's section again.